My name is Grant Vermeer, a member of the Crown Refs community. My first year as a high school official, that's when I found out about the Crown Refs community. Having my military background, I love being a part of teams. I want to be a part of a group that has high standards, that holds each other accountable, but also supports and loves each other, and has a desire for everyone in the group to grow. If you're a young referee or someone who loves refereeing and wants to be a part of a group, this is an amazing community for you. I feel like I've gotten better as an official. I've had a community and friends and support through this process, which can otherwise be a little bit lonely as you're on the road a lot. The culture is amazing in here. Make sure to come check it out.
Serve the game.
To join our community, simply go to patreon.com/crownrefs to choose your tier, or you can schedule a one-to-one call with me directly if you email me at crownrefs@gmail.com. Look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs podcast, the audio experience for basketball officials. Serve the game.
Yeah, this was a regional semifinal game.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's exciting. How'd it go?
It went fine. I don't know. The coach said we were the worst referee she ever seen.
Oh, we don't care what he says.
Yeah, we don't care. That makes sense.
Because I don't care if they think you did great or if they think you're the worst. Either way, doesn't matter. How do you even know they said that to you walking off the court?
Yes, she did.
After she lost?
After she lost, yes, of course.
That says everything about her character.
Yeah, so that actually leads me to a few questions.
Sure.
So I know you can give coaches texts when after, you know, last second has gone off the clock while we're still on the floor. How do you, like, adjudicate that?
You know, it's funny. I had that play this year. I had the opportunity to call a technical foul on the winning coach. So, coach of Team A wins by 2 points. They're getting ready to line up and shake hands. And the coach is shouting at me from across the court as I'm getting ready to exit the gym. That's terrible, Paul. You should be ashamed, Paul. That's ridiculous, Paul. So long story short, I did what basically every other ref has ever done, which is just walk to the locker room. However, in hindsight, and I wish I would have known it at the time, but this is an opportunity where I should have applied the rules as written. The officials have not left the jurisdiction of the playing court. In this case, it would have mattered. Right? If it's a 10-point game, then we don't acknowledge that, really. I mean, maybe you can for, like, suspension reasons, but it's not going to impact this game. But in my case, it was a 2-point game. The team who lost should have had the opportunity to shoot 2 shots back on the line to go to overtime. So I didn't execute that. So I know exactly what player you're talking about. Tell me about your situation and how it went down.
They were losing from the beginning, but they did make a comeback. It was a very close game, maybe 4-point game. And, you know, we're walking. Game is ended. We're walking back to the locker room. And she says to all of us, I happen to just be the last one on the floor. She says to all of us, this was the worst officiating I have ever seen. And I just told her, I said, coach, we're still able to give you a tech. And then I just walked to the locker room. And maybe I shouldn't have said anything, but...
Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, I have to swallow my tongue in these cases because I've said stuff in the past. But we don't want to, like, you don't want to say something threatening. Not that you're threatening them physically or anything besides that, but saying I should have given you a tech is just not something I want you to say to any coach, whether that's on the court during the game or off the court after game. Right?
Right.
Because ultimately you said it, but you didn't do anything about it, so it didn't mean anything. So just keep walking next time. But in this case, just to talk about the rule play that we're on, if it's a 4-point game and it's a state championship game, I'm continuing to walk because it has no effect on the outcome. If this is a regular season game, then I'm thinking a little differently.
This episode of the Crown Refs podcast is brought to you by RefereeStore.com. To save 15% on all United Attire products, enter CROWN15 at checkout. We hope you enjoy this episode, and do us one last favor before you listen. Have a great rest of your day.
then I think we should. I think we should penalize them.
Okay. Well, I guess my other thoughts about the game, I mean, I thought the game, we did a fine job officiating, but game management definitely could have been better. I was saying that from the beginning. Like I said, even with our commissioner or our assigner, sometimes I don't understand how he puts certain crews together. I don't know. I don't
out
think
of your control, don't even
yeah,
wonder.
It's out of
don't
my
even
control.
Start to ponder, yeah. Because you can scratch your head forever on those types of topics. The
I don't
why
know,
of it all.
I came to my crew a few times like, hey, you know, these coaches, like one of these coaches deserve to tech a long time ago. Like, we really need to, you know, settle them both down. Whether it's talking to the players, talking to the coaches, giving them a warning, but, you know.
So do you feel like you passed on a technical foul or your partners weren't handling the situation?
I'm not going to blame anything just on my partners, but I feel like we all weren't handling the situation.
Okay. Did you have an opportunity to address and approach the coach's behavior?
I don't think I was in a position to. I feel like I would have been out of position to do that, but that's why I brought us all together to say, hey.
What do you mean? What do you mean by out of position? Like physically or just
like on the other
emotional?
Side, like on the other side of the court. Like,
okay, so you didn't have an opportunity to close down that space, really.
Right. I didn't want to interrupt the game, I guess. Like,
well,
I didn't
now you're speaking about a different topic. Because you're saying we can't have the coach do X, Y, Z. And then you're saying we don't want to interrupt the game. Those two things are going to contradict themselves. Right? So if you feel like you need to address the coach, we can get to him at a timeout. You can switch during a free throw. So if your partner calls a foul and you're opposite, you can always just switch with your partner. Like, hey, partner, switch up. You know, like you don't have to tell them the reason. Just there's always opportunities for this. It's funny, I'm talking about the same exact game that I referenced before, but that game in particular, the whole first half, I felt like we should have given this coach a technical foul, and I didn't feel like I had an opportunity to get over. So this could be true. I was basically opposite table the entire half. There was maybe one timeout called. So I just feel like I didn't have the opportunity, but there was always, like if I go back and look at the film, there was a time I could have. So there's always an opportunity to address the coach.
Okay.
All right. Any other takeaways from our last session that you like applied in games this past couple weeks that we haven't spoke?
You know, definitely making sure my hand was straighter during free throws. That's something I always think about. And just trying to think more about what to say to coaches, bring my crew together more. So just being more slow, just, you know, processing information and just analyzing that. So I think it really helped. I still think I have a long way to go when it comes to, you know, responding to coaches. So
have you listened to more of the rapid response content?
Yeah, I'm catching up on it. So I started,
all right,
you know, the first podcast. So
okay.
I have a few more to go. But I know you made the document, so I saved it in my phone. I try to reference it all the time. So
yeah, that's a little cheat sheet.
Oh yeah. I guess we can start from the beginning of this game with the toss. I don't know if you saw the toss.
Yeah, good toss. Good toss. The toss is the least important part of the game in my opinion. In high school and college, because we really only do it one time a game if there's no overtime, and at the same time we can kill the play. It's the one time we get a do-over. So if I throw up a bad toss, you can just stop the play. If I do it again, you could just stop the play and redo. So don't put too much emphasis on the toss. Obviously, we want it to look good, but we want it to be the right height and be straight. That's it.
Yeah. Like I said, the game really started off in White's favor. They were on like a 7-0 run. It was just looking bad, like bad for them. Like, easy game,
try not to get too tied into the score as well. We start letting our guard down in blowouts and think it's like less important in a blowout. Or also one thing we always do is like think the game is bad because it's a blowout.
Gotcha.
Now, that's like the players, that's thinking with like a player's brain or a fan's brain that a blowout game is a bad game. You could ref a blowout game and it's a great game to ref. That's kind of always what I'm looking at. Is it a great game to ref? And that's not necessarily predicated on score, even though most of the time, you know, in those crunch time back and forth, competitive even games, then you might get that type of result. But remember, we can't dictate the result. We can't control the result. And every game has a different kind of character to it, different personality to it. They're all different.
Very true. That's a good point. Let me see where I marked in this game, too.
You got timestamps?
I do. So timestamp, second quarter, about 6 minutes left. Right there.
Oh, the screen?
Yeah. It was definitely, I feel like, an illegal screen. But I don't feel like I'm supposed to call that. I really couldn't see it. I can only see the aftermath. And in my head, I'm like, that looked like an illegal screen. But I was watching on ball because she was coming out of my area. So, like, after that, I also talked to my partner, like, hey, you know, can we watch the screens? Because pretty sure we just had an illegal screen, but I can't catch, like, I can't see that.
Here's two things you said that contradicts. You said that's definitely an illegal screen. And then you said I couldn't see that. So we got to be 100. If you don't know, that's cool. Let's look at it. Let's break it down, especially during the game, because then you go thinking like this was automatic. Oh, I should have called it. And now you're talking to the crew like, guys, we have to watch out for illegal screens when we're not sure if it was illegal. We're not 100%. It looked a little funny. Somebody went down. And so this just goes to show like a couple takeaways from what I just said. Number one, don't judge your partner's call, you know, during the game. Number two, don't blow the whistle unless you're 100%, which you didn't on this case. So that's good.
Right. But I guess my question for you on those type of plays, like, I guess who is in better position to see that since you're going off ball?
So let's break down the coverage. We'll go frame by frame. All right. Is the play? Or we'll break down the coverage frame by frame. So your trail position, this play is opening up to you. So you're about to pick up the ball handler, and then you have these two players in your area as well. As the play develops, you're reffing this handoff play. You have all four of these players in your primary. Handoff, you have this competitive matchup. Okay, now screen's coming. The center is picking up the screener. You're going to pick up the screener as well, but it originated from the center's primary, and the center is focused on this player right here and the screening action. Right? So this is center's primary, but here's the thing. On screens, we should have two officials reffing the play in a three-person game. Most screens are going to be dual coverage areas. Because if you think about the screen, you have 50% kind of the open angle. And this official has the other 50%, meaning like the backside look, the right shoulder area. You have the left side and the orange player's backside, right? So that's why we need two officials. So we can both be looking here now. Let's see, screen happens. So what is illegal about the screen? Okay.
She extended her knee.
I agree. Initially, she might have been planted, but she moves, I think, with the defender who's trying to fight through and then extends her knee, and it causes the defender to lose their balance. So having a patient whistle and not just calling it illegal right away.
Yeah, I know when I seen it, like I said, I thought I saw it, action, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah, good. So I don't want you to, if you think it's there, leave it alone. If you're not sure, leave it alone. If you're 99% sure, write this one down. If you're 99% sure, you're closer to 0%. And that's the way you just kind of go out there and ref. Yeah, you may see things that pop up on your radar that's, I wonder, is that a travel? Or that looked illegal. But if it's illegal, you're going to blow the whistle and you're going to be 100%. And it's just going to, you're going to respond. If you have to ponder it, then you're not 100%.
I like that. And like I said, I guess my whole thing with that, I was just trying to ask my partners, can we all help each other with screens? Because I know that's one thing I'm working on, is picking up screens better. Because like you said, they are always in a dual coverage area. So
Yeah, so that's something you also you can cover in your pregame about screens being dual coverage areas. And just if we're not 100%, don't blow the whistle. Screens, travels, like just make those obvious. We want those to kind of jump off the page.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of potential travel opportunities. Actually, every time there's a new player that's in player control, there's an opportunity to call travel. So, and then there's a lot of screens as well. So just making that obvious, making them stand out. It's a heck of a move. Let's see. What's the next timestamp? I just realized, too, we have a bottle of honey in our pantry that has a very similar logo to the color of orange. And this is one of my new favorite colors, like hot orange.
Just like that, you know that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it. Just want to let you know that.
I have like 416 timestamp. I'm not sure why, but actually 425.
All right, before we look there, is this a carry? It's very quick, but I think your hand comes under the ball.
But it was on our right side, you're saying?
Yeah, it's quick, though. You know, again, those have to be obvious, too. Was it obvious? It might be obvious if you slow it down, but we don't get that look in real time. So well, I guess I'll pass on that, too. But it caught my attention. I'm sorry, what was the next time?
425. I'm trying to figure out why I have that time sometimes, but we can look at it.
Okay, what do we have here? A hell ball?
I was going with a foul, but then I went with a hell ball. And I don't remember enough about that play, honestly. But looking at it again, I think a hell ball was the best.
Did you have to have a whistle?
I didn't.
Why not?
I think I blew my whistle quick.
And what's another reason why you didn't need to have a whistle?
Because she ended up getting the ball back.
And then one more reason.
I can't think of a third reason.
I would just say because she's in a position to make that pass, which is happening as you're calling hell ball. Okay. That's one thing. I don't like to call a hell ball when, like, the ball is in the air and it's not even in the two players' hands that initially had it. So that would just be another indicator. Like, on hell ball plays, let's not kill the play immediately when the four hands are on it or two opponents have both hands on it. Give them a breath to at least tug it. Now, I'm not saying we want to have a tug of war or a wrestling match, but in a physical sport like basketball, we have to at least give the players an opportunity to kind of rip it away from each other. And just kind of feel that out. Sometimes we have to stop the play right away because it's a safety issue. Two players are about to rip it and go to the ground. We could stop that real quick. So I think hell ball plays are about patience and just kind of the intuition to know if one of the players is going to maintain control.
Okay.
Stronger signals, stop the clock, pop the thumbs up out. And then strong point after that. So one, two, three.
Got it.
Have a little more certainty and conviction. Your chop, you just basically close your finger or close your fist. I want you to show a little more arm movement after you drop your hand. chop it like you're hitting a hammer or stabbing a wall.
Do you go all the way parallel, or are you just still?
You know, I finish in like a right angle.
Okay.
90-degree angle, right around face level.
Okay.
Just a little finish at the end. Same thing with your hand count. Whip it out there. Finish it. Like, make it fluid, make it sharp, make it crisp. You could still make it smooth, because I know you look smooth doing it. I just want you to turn up the volume a little bit on the sharpness.
Okay.
You've been practicing your signals?
I have. Just got to do some more. Okay. Maybe it was this part that I marked it for. So, I told you, I'm trying to get better with fumble, dribble, fumble plays, dribble, fumble, dribble plays. This one might not be a good example because she never really had possession of the ball when she fumbled it the first time. So,
can you tell from this angle if there's any player control?
No. Yeah, I don't think she had player control. So,
because right now we have the same look as you have right now. We can't tell where the ball is or who has it. We have no idea what's going on. We don't know anything. Don't know anything. And then we see player control. So, it's legal to me.
I think I was going to ask you on that play. If she had clear possession of the ball right there, then, like, she fumbled it, she would not be able to dribble it again.
You're saying, would that player be allowed to dribble just there, number three?
Yeah, like back in the seat. If she had like clear possession, because we really can't see it from this angle. So
yeah, I would say she would be. She could legally start a dribble there because she picked up the loose ball.
Okay.
But don't get too tied into like hypotheticals. What if this player did that? It's always good to add an extension or like another variation of what could occur, but don't get locked into, oh, what if this player just did this? Then would that have changed the way I called this? Because then you start going down a thread of just something that just might not be realistic.
No, I understand. I think because I'm still trying to just inventory those type of plays, and I'm never able to like actually get a good one when I have a game that's recorded. So.
Mm-hmm.
I never have like good examples to ask about. Mm-hmm. I never see them, only in my games, and I can't go back to it and look at it.
Now, what do you have here? Take us through this play.
But like right now, I see a bump. It's a little.
Who fouled 21? You have 21 pushing her?
Yes, I have 21 pushing her.
Were you 100% at the time after watching it? Do you feel any differently or the same?
Can we go back to it?
Yeah, it's coming up.
I might feel a little differently because it looks like 8 pushed into 21 who pushed into number 1 or whatever her name is. So white pushed into orange who pushed into white.
Maybe change the terminology to initiated contact, because when you say pushed into, I think of a foul, and I don't see a foul on white here.
Right. So white initiated contact on orange, who then ended up making contact with the white player.
From our angle, I don't think we could really tell what this is right here, because it basically, I think you may have called this little arm on the back, and I don't know if it pushes forward and causes her to fall down. I don't know if she's diving for a loose ball. My instincts tell me that this is nothing here to just play it on, but I'm not 100, so I don't want to guess. I would say stay closed down on that play. Like, don't be so quick to turn and report because there's a player on the floor. Like, even step to the girls. And just stay put for an extra second just to dead ball officiate. Make sure there's nothing that you need to manage. And again, more confidence at the table with your push. Show the numbers, white, 24. Keep it up there a second. Show the push. Make that last 1 to 2 seconds. And then hold the numbers up for a second. Just so there's a flow to the presentation and it's like, each signal is separated and it lasts a good, duration of time. You want to ask me about that one?
I do. I want to ask what you see on that play. But even before, I don't, yeah, I want to ask you what you see on that play, if any.
Well, number one, I'd like to see a little more boost right here as the ball's going up. Like you're starting your count and that's kind of slowing you down. I would just like to see you start to run to new trail position just to show that little burst. All right. Now, this is where we want to pick up the defender. If you're in lead here, referee in this play, you want to shift your eyes from the ball handler to the defender to see if they're legal or illegal. You know, I was going to say I don't see anything illegal. And then I watched, I think the defender's right hand kind of wrap offensive player. I don't know if it's enough, but I just want to take a look at what that contact is because there was nothing on the other side. And it's the offense kind of initiating, defenders backing up. When we have a retreating defender, that's a legal defender. They just keep backing up, then it can't be a foul on them. You see how she reaches around here and grabs? I mean, I could, if that's why he called that, I could understand that. You know, I tend to lean towards on no calls a lot on these type of borderline incidental versus illegal plays. So I'm not 100%, but I would say probably to leave this play alone. One thing, one takeaway is to not report hand check fouls on shooting fouls. So if you're ever putting a player on the line for two shots, it should not be because of a hand check. Very rarely will a hand check be a shooting foul. A hand check ha happens outside on the perimeter or on drives on the outside. We want to, number one, be patient on blow-bys where there's a hand check kind of play. Because if you hand check me and I go by you, that's not a foul because I beat you and I don't, we don't need to stop that play.
Okay.
And so if we're reporting a hand check, it should be a non-shooting foul.
Gotcha. And then I think you could play on because we have a similar play at the other end.
Plays can be similar, but they're very rarely the same, or they're never the same. So that could be a response for coaches when they're like, it's the same call. Whitney,
And
it's the same call.
that was her response.
So they like to say that's the same call, and that's where we can say, Coach, I hear what you're saying. Plays were similar, but they're very rarely the same. But if we have the same exact play on one end, we'll have the same exact result on the other.
Oh, actually, you can go back too because I told him that that was an opportunity to correct me because it was only one shot, but he didn't communicate to me that it was one shot, and I gave him two.
He said, you said he didn't communicate that to you?
Yeah, that we had t that we only had one shot.
Okay, but are you gonna blame, not to say you're blaming him, but shouldn't you be aware how many shots there are?
I should.
Because you're watching what happened. He's scoring the goal. You're looking at that. That's where my first feedback may come in. We're getting a little bit more of a burst on the play. So maybe you're a little bit more connected to what happened. Because all officials need to know right now what it is. Actually, you should be there to tell them the basket was good too. So, did he stop? Yeah, so I would stop it right here.
He
Right? Because
didn't
he.
like actively stop me, but I saw him come up and I kind of make eye contact with him, like, what happened? But he didn't like, blow his whistle
Yeah.
or.
So if this was me in trail and you showed two shots, hopefully I would pick it up as you showed two shots and I'd say, no partner, it's one, it's one. But if I pick it up when she has the ball, we have to make this an official correction. So we just got to blow our whistle and readminister. So you would just get the ball back. Guys, one shot, my fault, one shot, one shot. Say it a couple times, one shot, and then bounce it back.
Right.
Because he didn't make the correction. It's two shots right now. As of
I
now,
know,
it's.
yeah. So and I and he was telling me he didn't want to make that correction, but I was telling him it was okay to correct, like it's okay to correct me. Like just, blow your whistle, we'll dead it and then correct it and shot it. Because I've had this happen before where I was on the other end, but I deaded the play, so I
Good.
blew.
Don't let fear of a mistake shy us away. This is actually an opportunity to be loud about the mistake. And it's not even a mistake, it's just a simple correction. But that's why I love saying like my bad if I make a wrong out of bounds call, or that's usually the biggest time it comes on out of bounds plays. But I just love the opportunity to say it's my fault and say I messed up in that kind of context, because it shows credibility, it shows trustworthiness, and that we're not guessing and that we're all on the same page. And this is where, okay, you didn't know what was going on at the time.
Yeah, a little confusion.
Okay. So when you hold the ball, I want to see you hold it up on your hand like a platter, like you're a waitress here to serve the game, not on your hip. Just we're trying to add to your overall presentation, right? And it's the little adjustments that we make. So holding it up looks way more professional, looks more service-like. It's just a preference. It doesn't matter how you hold the ball, right, essentially.
Yeah. I try to be more cognizant of that. So game play was similar.
We're a little stacked to what the contact did, but I hear what you're saying, it being a similar play. Different result of contact. In this case, the girl went down. What do you got here?
I think I would have had a block. I would have had a block.
Good signal. Look professional. Look believable. What's the next timestamp? See Whitney calling something. What are you calling? What did I miss? It's coming up, or did I miss miss it?
I don't know. I thought you saw something.
Well, you had a whistle.
Oh, went out of bounds.
All right, break out the stopwatch.
Okay.
Looked close to 5 seconds. Close enough. I would just say make sure it's 5 seconds and it's not 4.7.
Okay. So I think in that moment, I felt like I started my count like 1 second late as well. So maybe that's a question for you. When do you start your count for a 5 second?
So you're going to start at 1 second in, you know, as you hand it off, hands up, that first chop should be right when that 1 second is complete.
Okay.
You know, we don't want to hand the ball and then immediately count right away, because that's a little quick. But ultimately, just making sure that we don't want to call a 5 second too soon. I'd rather you be a split second too late than too soon. A lot of officials will rush that last second. Seconds 1, 2, 3, and 4 are 1 second, but then that last second, you know, as the pressure of that violation starts to arise, that last second sometimes gets quicker than one.
Okay. The last time stamp I have is the fourth quarter, 2:20.
Yeah, nothing in between now and 2:20?
Nothing that I noted.
Okay.
But we can watch a little bit of it if you want to. The third quarter is when the game got close. So basically what happened on that play is I'm looking at the coach and I hear her. I hear timeout like 5 times. But she's not saying timeout. She's saying 5 out. And I'm watching her and I hear her. And I'm watching her hand signal. And to me, I thought she was calling a timeout. So I granted her a timeout. On accident.
Did you grant a timeout or did you call a technical foul?
A timeout.
Right, but what signal did you show? Let's look again. What's the signal for a timeout?
I stop clock and just point.
Okay, but what's the official signal for a timeout? 30 second.
Oh, 30 second.
Okay, and full timeout. So, okay, you granted it here. This is, I would say, the granting signal. And then what signal is this?
So she had said something. She was like, I didn't call a timeout. And I said, I heard you and you were going like this. So I thought you were calling a timeout. So this was me telling her.
Okay. So eliminate unapproved, excuse me, eliminate excess unapproved signals. Now, I know you're showing an approved signal, but it's not the correct signal. So don't even like mimic or try to explain what she's doing, because it's making us confuse the situation. So if I'm in the stands or if I'm the coach, you know, I think I'm getting a technical foul here because you're showing the technical foul signal. I know you're mimicking what she did, but I wouldn't even do that there. At that point, I would say, okay, you don't want a timeout? Inadvertent whistle. Partners, inadvertent whistle. My fault. This gets back to the my fault. Okay, no problem. Easy fix. Easy fix. Stay on the court. It's not a timeout. Inadvertent whistle.
Yeah, and that's what we ended up doing. And also, score was wrong at this point, so they had to fix that too, but
I know when we make sometimes we make a mistake, we watch our positioning after that and we just start to drift into a place like, because we're probably thinking about what we just did.
I was a little flustered because they both started yelling. And I was like, dang.
Who started yelling?
Both coaches.
At you?
Yeah, at me.
Because of the timeout error?
Yeah, because of the timeout. Orange coach felt like they were going on a fast break, but I don't think it impacted the game. However, it was still a mistake.
Oh, but hold on a second. It was whites. It was orange ball?
It
you
was.
Granted, oh, so you granted the timeout to the white. I'm just picking that up now.
And because I also, and I thought about it, I also thought she was trying to get it when the ball went through the basket. So, yeah, but it was just a mistake. I really don't have that. So.
All right, no worries. Edit and fix next time. That's it. This game came down to the wire.
It did. They ran away with it in like the last minute, but like I said, 4-point game, 5-point game. Oh, and then another part of this game, because I don't know if it was you that told me, or maybe it was our rules interpreter that said it's always like it's not a bad thing to ask a coach in this type of game situation if they are trying to foul. Like, I know one of us had asked the orange coach, like, towards the end of the game, her players were fouling, but I guess she didn't want them to foul, but they were fouling. So one of us went and asked her, you know, hey, are you trying to foul? And she said, no. And it was right after we had called a foul. And I think I had called a foul, but it was a foul. So. But I don't know. How do you feel about that? Asking
that's question? A good question. Good topic. I would probably not go up to them and initiate that conversation. I've been there when they've initiated that and said, hey, ref, just to let you know, we're trying to foul, just so you know. And that's nice to know, but not something I'm going to seek out.
Okay.
Because you just kind of tell with the player's actions. If they're reaching and looking like they're trying to commit a take foul, I'm just going to go off what I see and not what the coach told me their strategy was, because that could then get confusing, you know. But I don't see how it could really hurt you, but just not something I would recommend doing, asking them about it. But that's just my viewpoint. I'm sure there's officials that would tell you to do it and that would be helpful. So I guess it depends what you ask. That's where the coach said you're the worst.
We're the worst. Yeah.
Not very classy. I feel like I want to post her. Like, I want to post this point. Oh, you lose by 4, and you go up to the ref and blame the ref.
Yeah, her exact words were, my season is done. You all were the worst officials I've seen, so.
Wow. Sad people. But nice job on that game. I mean, that's a big-time assignment. And you held your own. You look super poised and under control. So just a couple, like, you know, mechanics things. It was actually a pretty fairly quiet game for you, right?
Yeah. I thought it was fine. I don't think I was too stressed out about it. I was a little, you know, flustered with my timeout, but can't fix it. So,
what does stress you out on the court?
When I feel like we're not controlling the game, managing the game, the bench, the coaches.
When you feel like your crew is not doing it? How do I get you to not stress your partners and your crew and not Because you got to control what you can control, and like you really can't control what your partners are doing out there. We can game plan together, we could try to be on the same page as much as possible, but ultimately they're going to call what they call, and we're going to have to respond to that.
All right, I can do a better job stepping up, like feeling comfortable stepping up. You know, hey, coaches, this is your warning. Sorry, that's not something I felt comfortable enough doing yet. And
you
I
don't feel.
I'm trying to get away from this mindset of I'm not the R, so like I don't want to like you know step on the R's toes because I feel like that's a thing in our association, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's like that everywhere. It's like that with newer officials that work with older officials, and there's also a lot of ego involved in this conversation, right? Each official is equal. And every official should approach the game like they're the R in the game. We should have three R's mentally. It should be three R's. Because that mentality really holds officials back. It holds officials back from stepping up and holding up their end of the bargain sometimes because they feel the fear of stepping on someone's toes. You know, and that can confuse you, really can. So I want you to be the R every game. Remember this pecking order. The game comes first, our partners come second, and then we come third. So you're never stepping on your partner's toes because the game comes before all of us. So if me and you are working a game together and the coach is just being demonstrative towards me and like being outwardly disrespectful towards me and I don't do anything about it, well, what comes first, my feelings or the game?
The game.
So that should be your leverage and your permission to do what's best for the game. And hopefully your partner will thank you for it. So this is, you know, your permission to step up and do what's right for the game. So back to what you were saying about the coaches, you're like, I don't have the confidence to say that's your warning. Do you feel like
partially that and partially feeling like when I should say that, because I feel like some moments it's just a game interrupter. Like I said, so finding the correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Knowing what to address and knowing what to ignore is a big skill set. And you got to have that filter to know like what's irrelevant and that's doesn't apply to me and that's not something we need to address to, oh no, I have to get over on the next time out. We have to talk about that. Officials allow too much. Generally, we don't get over soon enough. The last podcast I did about rapid responses, I broke it down into four steps. Number one is having the awareness to know that the coach is being too big of a voice in the game. Like, do you even know they're doing that? Or are you so oblivious to what's going on the court that you're not even paying attention or really hear what they're saying? Also, number two, after we know what they're doing, being able to almost make a timeline of the stuff that they've done throughout the game. 18:24, stomped his feet and yelled travel. 17:23, after I called the push, he said, ref, how is that even a foul? My guy didn't touch him. 15:24, threw his arms up after my partner gave him an explanation. So these are all things that we should kind of know that is what has happened already and transpired in the game so we can call them out on that behavior. So let's say we're playing out this scenario where these three things happen in the first half. Now I'm going up to the coach at the free throw line and saying, hey, coach, we're very approachable if you have a question. However, we're not going to tolerate you stomping your feet, you throwing your arms up in the air, and you shouting your opinion onto the court. How can we get you to be more professional? And that's how you send the coach the message, to get the message, right, about sportsmanship and respect for the game. And if we don't send the message, they just keep doing whatever they want. So having the confidence, as you said, to even go up and approach the coach, it takes us approaching them. It takes us initiating the conversation. It's not going to happen in our favor if we just sit back and let them control the whole dialogue.
I like that. Do you still have that same philosophy for dealing with crowds, like the fans, or?
So there's a protocol in order. There's game management. If fans are saying personal comments towards the ref, you suck, ref, that's horrible. Like making it personal towards the officials, and I'm not talking about booing. Then go get game management. Go up to game management, say, hey, this section is making personal comments towards the officials. Please either give them a warning or tell them they have to leave. So knowing, for you, going into every gym you work, whether it's a AAU game, fifth grade game, or a varsity game, or one day a college game, know who's running that gym, know who's in charge of that gym, know who the game administrator is that can escort a fan out of the gym. Because if we don't know that, then it's almost like we're powerless. Then you almost have to do it yourself. There's been times I've done it myself. Ideally, I wouldn't want to do it myself. I would just want to go to the person in charge, and then it's just deploy them to do whatever you want. But you have to address the fans. Most officials don't want to bother. It's hard. It's uncomfortable. It's messes up the flow of things. It has people making more comments towards us. It has all the attention on us, blah, 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 blah. These are all excuses to not do it and to allow it to happen. And then it just keeps happening. It'll happen at my game because, it'll happen at your game because I didn't do anything last game. So, in 2024, you should not have to take abuse, personal comments like that. So don't ask your partner's permission because they probably won't want to touch it. Just know who's in charge of the gym and deploy them.
And I also think I especially I end up in like, I'm the only female on a crew. I subconsciously try not to say stuff and just go to my crew. I'm like, hey, we should do this. So I don't seem like the sensitive one in the crew.
Well, by you not doing it, you're showing inaction. You're like by you stepping up shows you have full command. You shows you don't need like anyone else's permission to do what is right. Don't worry about how they view you. View yourself as amazing and be confident in yourself and forget what anyone else is going to say about your decision.
X, I like that.
Most of the answers they come from within. Like the stress you're feeling about your crew, it's actually more confidence you need in yourself. It really is. Once you're so comfortable with yourself, then you're okay with mistakes, and then you're okay with everyone else's mistakes. But if you're not okay with your mistakes, then you're not going to be okay with anyone else's mistakes. Make sense?
Makes sense.
So we're trying to go very insular with you and just fix as many things we can on our end, and then that'll start trickling into a lot of other areas of the game.
Okay. Well, let's see what other questions would I have.
Yeah, fire away. Let's
I
do a
was
round.
about camps, in terms
Okay.
of like what camps to go to and stuff like that. Like, what camp should I go to this summer?
Okay, so you're in Virginia, right? And you're working high school and
High school, AAU.
okay, no junior college or D3 yet. So I would go to that camp. Do you know who the assigner is?
So for I think ODAC, USA South.
ODAC.
Are combined. Like, I know USA South is whoever does that has D1 conferences too, so.
Okay. You want to work D1 eventually, right? I would try to go to all as many D3 camps. The ODAC is one. I would sign up for the ODAC. What about the Division II
I
leagues
asked
in your
about
area?
CIAA today in the chat. I don't think anybody info on it yet. I don't know any other division two really, so I just know CIAA.
Nobody responded, or they said it's not out yet.
Nobody responded as of yet. I think somebody said good question, but I don't think we have the information yet.
Okay, so then that would be the second camp you should attend. ODAC and CIAA and maybe a teaching camp as well. I mean, it also depends kind of what your budget is. Would you be interested in going to Roger Ayers' camp?
I don't know who that is, but sure, yeah.
Well, that's in Virginia. That's the one I go to and film a lot of the videos at.
All
It's
right.
at Liberty.
That
it's
one
at
on
Liberty.
the list, or...
Yeah, I think it was posted last week.
Roger, how do you spell his last name?
Ayers.
I did sign up for one training camp, I guess. That worked for my schedule. Whose training camp is that? Natasha's, I guess. It's like one of the first
Oh,
ones.
Cammy?
Yeah.
You're coming to Philly? Is it a Philly?
Going to Michigan.
Oh, wow. Good.
Yeah.
You know, she was on our podcast a couple times. Did you hear her episode?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good.
So
good.
one of her.
Make that connection when you go. I just text you Roger's information. How far are you from Roanoke?
About 2 hours.
I mean, I'm going to be there. I've gone the last 3 years. There's probably going to be 10 other officials from Crown Refs there too. This is a really good experience, really good instructional camp.
I think
And
it's the weekend of ODAC camp, though.
okay.
Yeah, it is the weekend of ODAC camp. You know, for some reason I don't go to ODAC, I will be there. And then some people, I don't know, say, I don't know how you feel about this, but I know Tony had posted his camp, and not that I'm trying to get picked up in D1 this year, but a lot of people do say it's great for learning.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if I should go to MEAC. So yeah, what is your opinion?
What was the last thing you said?
I just don't know if I should go there. Like,
yeah.
Your
well, opinion. You really can't hurt yourself by going. You really can't hurt yourself. Like, what are you going to do that's going to make people say, oh, I'm never going to hire them? If anything, you want to almost get there earlier so you can look at it as a 2-3 year thing. You're going to be going back, and then they can see the progressive steps you've been taking each year. You're going to get to show more growth. So, you know, I was talking to an official earlier this evening on a call, and he's not an NCAA official yet. And I was saying how he probably shouldn't go to a D1 camp yet. He should go to D3 tryout, D2 tryout. And then we started talking a little more, and we're just like, no, you should go. Like, you can't hurt yourself. Are you going to get hired? No, you're not going to get hired first year. But you are going to put yourself in front of the people that eventually are going to potentially hire you. So I would say, like, go sooner than later. If you feel up to it and, you know, it's something you want to do, then just go. You write your own story. You write your own journey. Nothing about what anyone else has done really is any relevance to you.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to carve out your own lane, you know. And somebody else's path has nothing to do with the one you're taking. So I would say go sooner than later.
Okay. Well, then follow-up question. I know for a lot of D1 camps, you have to do a referee resume, and they want you to have 2 years of experience. So, like, do I just not put I have 2 years of college experience? Like what do
I? You said you need 2 years of college experience?
That's what Tony said, yeah, I guess.
Tony
Brothers.
Brothers? His camp had that on it?
Yeah, I can go look at the language.
Let's break down the lingua.
Requirements, it said, suggested 2 years college officiating experience upon registration. You must submit a basketball officiating resume for consideration of acceptance.
Yeah, I mean, a resume is just something to look at. Doesn't hold much relevance. It's more of just a technicality and administrative thing. It said suggestion, so that's not a rule. That's just suggestion. Because you know he doesn't want like JV officials all at the camp, right? He wants a certain level of official there, but it didn't say you can't go. I would say go.
Mm-hmm. Well, any more camps that you'll be at? That's kind of where they are, but
I'm going to a camp in Wisconsin. I'm going to one in Texas, and I'm going to one in Virginia.
Okay, which one? In Texas,
Wisconsin is the Three Zebras camp, which is the week before the one we mentioned. That's July 7th, I believe, or excuse me, June 7th or June 8th or 9th.
Okay.
Texas is that following weekend. Texas is the same weekend as your ODAC and the same weekend as actually Virginia. Actually, Texas and Virginia are in the same weekend. I'm thinking of going Thursday and Friday and Saturday to Texas and then come to Virginia Saturday night and Sunday.
Okay. What's the name of the Texas camp, I guess?
Great question. I don't know yet. It hasn't been posted.
Okay. Well, any other conferences, I guess? Because I guess a lot of people also say with D3, don't go too far. I don't know.
But it's your life. Do you want to go? Like, would you? Depends how much you want to drive. Like, you can't listen what they do. It's up to you. If it's something that, you want to do, everybody's availability is different. Everybody's work-life balance is different. So you basically want more camps kind of outside the Virginia.
Well, will assign you if you live, like, too far?
Yeah, I mean, probably you're not going to work a New Jersey league, I don't know all of the leagues in Virginia. That's where I would want you to lean into the community about any other conferences. You have Portia's number, right?
I do. Yep.
I would check in with her and see what camp she's going to, cause she's on the circuit and she's moving up and she's starting to work multiple college conferences. So check in with her, and I would ask the community any other leagues in the Virginia area or the city you're in.
Okay.
Do you know the college landscape? What other conferences are close to you?
I know more so the bigger conferences, not a lot of the smaller ones. So I only know USA South, ODAC, CIAA, which you just don't have the information mm-hmm. for. And I used to play in USCAA, so I'm trying to figure out that. I know they have a few schools out here that are in USCAA, but I don't even know the whole layout of USCAA, so.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure what that is.
It's more so like an intercollegiate conference.
Okay. So
like it's like a JUCO conference, a lot of JUCO schools.
Mm-hmm.
NCAAs.
Any other questions you want to ask? Anything else you want to
touch
on?
Oh, yes. How do we get our shirts and stuff?
Okay. So you went to the website and updated your shipping? And
I don't know. We'll see.
Okay. So go to Patreon on the desktop.
Okay. Patreon. Maybe I didn't do that.
Yeah. Go to your profile. Update your sizes on the t-shirt and the sweatshirt and put your shipping info, and I'm going to ship a mug, get a coffee mug, the first gift. It's after 3 months of when you signed up. So right. You've been here about 2 months now. So I would think within a month or two, it'll ship. But yeah, you get it every 3 months. So let's look at when you did sign up. January 29th. So February, March, April. So you'll probably be getting it at the end of April.
So you said I would go to, I'm logged in, I would go to membership?
Probably profile.
I don't know. I'll figure it out. And if I have questions, I'll.
I posted it in the chat the other day. I'm going to text you directly the link. I believe that you could do it.
Guess I'll see you in another month.
You can text me before that.
I do.
I know. I wasn't meaning that. Like, you never text me. I was just saying, it's not like we won't speak for a month. Send me some clips if you want. I'll text you this link, and then just log on, or I'll email you the link so you could just log on your computer and then just update your information.
We'll do. I'll work on that. Everything we talked about today. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It was great working with you. Have a great night, and it's been a pleasure getting to know you so far.
Thank you. See you, Paul. Good night.
All right. Good night, Wayne. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Crown Refs Podcast. Serve the game.
All right, Johnny Gleese reaching out. We're going knee tuck. Comfortable feel, you know, easy to put on. In the locker room before a game, I'll hang my shirt up, put them on the shirt. Once you pop your shirt on, after you're done with stretching and you're warming up, you know, they clip real quick. You can have a little slide band to tighten them up and down. I like to go tight, just like a sneaker. When you place your shoes up, you like it tight. It's going to loosen up after the game goes, as you run, as your muscles flex. And they never ride up. Some, you know, I've had good success with these, keeping my shirt in. When you're at the free throw line, watching the game, you don't want to be messing with your shirt, messing with your pants. Knee tucks are, you know, the way that helps us to not do that.